DNB Tech Minute gives you the day's top tech headlines, from the big names in Silicon Valley to the halls of power. If it's making news in tech, we've got it. Check out DNB Tech Minute in the Tech News Briefing feed from The Wall Street Journal.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
President Biden says he's considering using executive power to forgive student debt. But will this be as popular as Democrats think? And is it even legal? Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with The Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, editorial board member Kate Batchelder-Odell and editorial writer Mene Ukwe-Barua. A happy, beautiful spring Friday to you both. 7 months from the November elections, Democrats are worried about President Biden's plunging poll numbers among young voters in particular. There's a Quinnipiac poll this month that says 33% of voters overall approve of the job that Biden is doing as president, but it's only 21% among voters ages 18 to 34. And this is the context for a renewed push to forgive student debt. On Wednesday, Senate leader Chuck Schumer said the president was getting closer to making that move, and here is a piece of Schumer's speech.
For over a year, one of my top priorities as majority leader has been urging President Biden to cancel $50,000 in student debt for each student loan borrower. Right now, as discussions continue within the administration about the future of student debt, I again call on the president to take action, which he can do on his own, and hit the financial reset button for millions and millions of Americans. President Biden's done the right thing by continuing the moratorium on student loan payments. His actions have saved millions from financial ruin during the COVID crisis. But borrowers don't just need their debts paused. They need them erased.
Then on Thursday, President Biden was asked about this Schumer's speech, and here's what he said.
I am considering dealing with some debt reduction. I am not considering $50,000 debt reduction, but I'm in the process of taking a hard look at whether or not there will be additional debt forgiveness, and I'll have an answer on that in the next couple weeks.
So, Kate, I guess this is what they call a negotiation. Biden campaigned in 2020 on forgiving $10,000 in student debt. Schumer and other Democrats want $50,000. Biden says he won't go there, but maybe somewhere in between.
Yeah, Kyle, keep in mind that most student debt, we talk about it, $1.6 trillion in outstanding student debt, but a lot of it is concentrated among a relatively small share of borrowers who attended graduate school or either in medicine or law. These were the large balances tend to be. So basically now we're in this debate about whether to forgive up to $10,000 for borrowers or whether to go further as progressives want and forgive up to $50,000. Now, the fiscal differences between those two proposals are quite large. Forgiving up to $50,000 of debt, the last report I read on that said it would cost $950 billion. I mean, Kyle, that is more than the U.S. spends annually on its national defense. The smaller, up to $10,000 proposal is somewhat more fiscally modest, perhaps $250 billion, but still quite significant and would be done without Congress appropriating the money to do it.
The other thing that I think Republicans are going to be talking a lot more about as this goes on is the fairness issue. And there are about 60% of Americans have at least some college education. That doesn't mean they finished or got the degree, but that also means that about 40% do not. And those people include plumbers and truck drivers and oil roughnecks. And are we really going to tax those people to forgive the debt of a lot of people who are white collar? Because as Kate says, a huge chunk of the student debt in this country is held by doctors, lawyers, PhDs, people with master's degrees. And Mene, I think there would be a lot of very upset populist uprising if Biden were to go this direction.
I think that's right. I mean, if you look at the way that student loan forgiveness polls right now, Americans are of pretty divided mind. A small percentage supports erasing student debt outright. I think that might be about 20%. There are other people who are ambivalent. I think about 30% say that they generally disfavor it, but that still leaves a large persuadable middle. But I think that's because it's never really been imminently on the table. We haven't had a president quite as committed to doing it in the near term as President Biden now seems to be. And once people start thinking harder about what it would mean to wipe out outstanding student debt, I think that you would have a lot of people who either have never taken on debt, sort of those blue-collar workers who you mentioned, or people who have paid off their debt, which probably sort of includes a majority of college-educated adults, saying, "What, this is really, really a raw deal for us." I think, frankly, a number of Americans who hold outstanding debt is probably about 12 million. I've seen different estimates there. But the idea that we would, for example, if Biden goes ahead with the plan to forgive $10,000 of student debt, be transferring about $320 billion directly to such a small number of beneficiaries, I think would strike people as a very shallow move to buy the votes of a sort of particularly young segment of the electorate who Biden wants to make sure turn out of the polls in November at the expense of American taxpayers. That is not a small amount of money that he would be asking the rest of the country to pick up the tab for.
Just to put some hard numbers on it, the analysis that I've looked at comes from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. And they cite some academic research, and here's a line. It says, capping debt cancellation at $10,000 per household would still distribute 28% of the benefits to the top quintile and only 5% to the bottom. And if you go higher than $10,000, you make those numbers even worse, regressive, as they say in other contexts when they're talking about tax rates and so forth. Because if you forgive a higher figure, you're getting more of the debt of those doctors and those lawyers while not reaching any new people. And so, Kate, this is a policy that I think if Republicans were to propose something like this on the tax side, Democrats would be up in arms about the regressive nature of this spending to benefit people who are really on the high end.
Right, Kyle. And when you talk about the fairness aspect, you mentioned that some people decided not to go to college and not to take on debt. Well, also, you know, Kyle, perhaps you went to Iowa State, right? And you maybe looked at across colleges and decided to choose a school that was less expensive than some of the other schools you got into. So you also had people who made marginal good decisions, but perhaps didn't get that more prestigious degree or more expensive degree they wanted. And now that is another fairness element of this. But on your point about how just completely expensive, regressive, even inflationary in this bad inflation environment we're in, this would be, yes, basically a paper out of UChicago a couple years ago was talking about how full or partial forgiveness tends to benefit the top decile of earners as much as the three bottom three combined. And while Democrats also tend to emphasize that it benefits minorities, Hispanics tend to hold much less debt than whites. And so it's not an even distribution there either. So this is a very regressive policy and will mostly, even at the $10,000 level, I think, be largely to those who have the ability to eventually pay back their loans. Because one thing we haven't talked about, Kyle, here is that the government runs income-based repayment plans with certain terms that limit to your share of your income. If you work in public service, the loans get forgiven. In public service, broadly defined, the loans are forgiven faster. There are options that exist for those who genuinely need help repaying their loans. And what the Biden administration has done so far is just basically try to expand and this program's eligibility over time and get more and more people in it. But we shouldn't buy into the fiction that is sometimes peddled on this, which is that there's no way to help anybody who needs it. There are programs that exist for this. Instead of targeting them towards the people who benefit the most, they've just become broad forgiveness programs that Congress never really authorized.
And I think we should not buy into the fiction either that this is not spending by Congress. I get that it feels differently if Congress is forgiving a piece of debt that someone has taken out as opposed to taxing someone and putting the money out the door for solar panels or a jobs program or something like that. It feels a little bit different. But Manet, we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars here, and that would go on to the debt, I can only imagine. And at some point, that's going to have to be reckoned with and paid back.
That's right. I mean, again, I think it's worth pausing to put the numbers that have been attached to these loan forgiveness proposals in their proper context. At the $50,000 level, we'd be talking about $1.6 trillion or so, which is about the size of the American Rescue Plan. That's the last stimulus that the Biden administration passed right after taking office. If you shave it down to $10,000 per borrower, again, it's about $300 billion, maybe $320 billion. And that's from an estimate that comes from the New York Fed very recently. And that's still much larger than almost any domestic spending bill previous to the COVID emergency over the past few years. So this is really a really huge liability sort of for the federal government. And frankly, when it comes to a lot of these types of spending, legislators tend to at least argue that they have some kind of economic multiplier. When we put these billions of dollars into the economy, they'll say, oh, you know, we're investing in creating jobs, or we're providing some other benefit, which is going to at least, you know, stimulate the economy and create downstream growth. In the case of student loan forgiveness, obviously, it does have an impact on the pocketbooks of the people who are having their debt erased. They're going to be able to go out and spend on other priorities instead of spending that money sort of on their loan balance, sending it right back to the federal government. But nobody could argue that that sort of qualifies as an investment. It's not as if this is something that is a new benefit, which is going to make it easier for more Americans down the line to attend college or anything of that sort. Basically, it's a direct transfer of the most basic kind, and nobody could expect it to have any kind of economic benefit. So I think that makes that $320 billion loom even larger in terms of Americans wondering, is it worth adding this extra liability to sort of an existing sort of federal debt balance?
The other thing that strikes me here is the effect on incentives. And it seems to me that this is what economists would call a moral hazard. Because if the government here wipes away $10,000 or $50,000 or $25,000, whatever the number is, of student debt for this generation, the next generation, I think, is going to be a lot less careful about watching its own balance on the assumption that sooner or later, some other politician like Joe Biden is going to come along and help me out. And to the same point, I think colleges are going to be similarly less reluctant to raise their tuition, because if the precedent is that Uncle Sam is waiting around to bail everybody out of this at some point, then Kate, I think there is going to be a lot less focus on what we really need to do, which is thinking about how we can keep these costs down in the first place and not building every college the best climbing wall and the best lazy river.
Yeah, exactly right, Kyle. I mean, as unfair and expensive as this move is, it also is a complete gift to colleges that have not been disciplined about what they're charging. In 2015, I wrote something about a New York Federal Reserve study that said for every new dollar a college receives in direct subsidized loans, a school raises its price by 65 cents. And the number for Pell Grants was 55 cents. So what that study basically was looking at is how colleges have acted to capture these generous federal loans. And this system is completely unsustainable. Mitch Daniels, president of Purdue University, once described a college degree to me as Giffen good, the product for which the demand keeps growing even as its price increases. And this is really dysfunctional. And so this would be a tremendous missed opportunity to think about how we finance college. And one thing I think that's important to that conversation is I'm not in favor of there's some popular movement toward punishing excise taxes on college endowments. Not in favor of those, but I do think we need to think more about how colleges have some investment and skin in the game in some of the loans that their students take out. And there would be ways to do that and try to encourage them to spend more of their endowments on this affordability issue and also hold them accountable for how their students do in the real world. I also think that another idea that has been written about is paying for college with equity instead of debt. And basically that would mean promising some small share of your future income and making the investor assume the risk instead of the college student, if that makes sense. Now, there's a lot of ways you have to organize these things to set them up properly so that you don't encourage kids not to work. But my larger point here, Kyle, is that this would be a tremendous missed opportunity to change the way we pay for higher education and think about it. And I think public has a real appetite for that. The public understands that the current system we have for paying for college is crazy and has terrible incentives. And forgiving in student debt en masse would simply help out all the bad actors in that system.
The only other thought I would add on accountability is also accountability for getting kids into programs where they can succeed and get the degree. There's some statistics that say that fewer than 2/3 of students who start college finish college within 6 years. And that is among the more tragic cases, is the people who take out the debt and don't even get the degree they were going for in the first place to help them pay it back. Hang tight, we'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
NetSuite by Oracle brings accounting, finance, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce costs everywhere. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/wallstreet.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Monet, what about the legal side of this? There are arguments on both sides that President Biden does or does not have the authority to do this unilaterally. What do you make of that argument?
Well, first of all, executive branch oversight over federal loans originates with the 1965 Higher Education Act, which basically delegated to the Education Department the ability to sort of grant these loans, to collect them and to administer them. And so that's the authority that they cite for regular operations for the conduct of student loans. But the Higher Education Act makes no mention of debt cancellation. And so people have argued over the past few years as student loan balance nationwide has continued to grow over whether they might have the authority to wipe out those loans. And the Trump administration considered this, and I believe they suggested that, no, the executive branch does not have the authority to do this unilaterally, that they would need Congress to sign on if they were going to do it. I believe that President Biden himself also said originally that he didn't think that the president and the executive branch would be able to wipe out student loans. But as with many issues during the Biden administration, they have reconsidered and created some kind of legal articulation for what would give them the authority to do this. And that there's a second question in addition to whether the Education Department is able to wipe out the debt, which gets to who would be able to theoretically challenge that action in court if they did go ahead and do it. And so obviously you're required to have standing to bring a federal suit. And that means that you have to show that you're injured in some way by the decision or by the actions of the party who you're suing. And it's a funny thing because sort of in practice, as we've been discussing, almost all Americans, everybody who isn't one of those 12 million theoretical beneficiaries of the loan erasure, would be hurt by the action because the federal government would then have to tax or borrow to make up for the loss of those repayments. But that doesn't necessarily qualify you to bring a federal lawsuit. I mean, it's a complicated question. And so nobody is quite sure exactly who would be able to rein in the Biden administration judicially if they did go ahead with their own legal interpretation and wipe out the student debt, despite doubts about whether they had the constitutional authority to do that.
I have also been wondering about this standing question. And I was reading a recent law article in the Virginia Law Review making the argument that there's nobody who would have standing to sue here, or at least people can't assume that there is anyone. And it goes through some of the possibilities. You know, taxpayers could sue, but it says that a court would probably find that this is a political issue for the branches. You know, taxpayers can't sue every time the government spends money in some way that they don't like or think is improper. What about former loan borrowers? Well, it says that if former loan borrowers had standing to sue, then anytime the government created a new program for first-time home buyers or veterans or whatnot, then people who were around before that program was created would have standing. And so there's a real problem here. Maybe Congress would have some standing to sue, although, Kate, we're also in a situation where we have both sides of Congress controlled by Democrats, by Biden's party. And so depending on how fast he could get this kind of forgiveness done, if he could get it done before the November election or before the transfer of power potentially to Republicans in the House or Senate in January, maybe there'd be nobody that's around to challenge it, which is not an argument for the president to do the thing that might be illegal, but I'm surely it factors into his calculations.
Yeah, Kyle, I believe that Biden even said in 2020 that it was, quote, pretty questionable about his authority to cancel debt broadly across the board. This may not to be too cynical, Kyle, but this may just be interested in doing this as sort of an election gimmick and we'll count on it getting challenged, but assume that fight will continue past the November election. I do think the standing debate is an interesting one, but I certainly think any number of people would try to sue and we might get some more clarity on that question over time. But in general, I think this is largely a election year political ploy more than a serious legal proposal.
Yeah. And I guess to dig in on the legal issue just a little bit more, Manet, you mentioned the Trump Education Department, and there's a memo that people can find online that was written in part by the principal deputy general counsel there. And what he's saying is that the executive branch has some power on a case-by-case basis to make decisions. There's a quote from him here in one report. It says, the pause, meaning the COVID pause in payments, the pause is the far outer edge of where you can go with your authority. He says there's no statutory, no constitutional basis for President Biden to outright forgive this kind of debt. And to the points that have been made about Biden's previous statements, this used to be, I think, the general understanding. And here is one member of Congress making exactly this argument last year.
People think that the President of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. He does not. He can postpone, he can delay, but he does not have that power. That has to be an act of Congress.
And that was, of course, Nancy Pelosi, Manet. And so it does show how much the progressive argument here, the one that Schumer is making, that you should forgive 50,000 or more, it does show how much headway it has made in this debate.
Yes, I mean, my first reaction to that is to tip my hat to the Trump administration, because it's always refreshing when you have the executive branch taking a pessimistic view of its own powers. That doesn't happen very often in American politics. I'm not surprised to see that the Democrats have evolved somewhat in their understanding of what the legal basis for canceling student debt might be. I suppose they basically, as Kate implied, were saving this as kind of a break glass in case of emergency provision that they might be able to use if they thought that they needed a bump in the midterms. And as President Biden's popularity has continued to slide, the calls for this policy to move forward have found a much friendlier audience in the Biden administration, which then has required them to retroactively create the legal justification. But yeah, frankly, that theory that you laid out about sort of the distinction between how the federal government can use its discretion on a case-by-case basis and could pause loans or maybe even offer forgiveness on a limited basis if they're able to provide some justification for that versus kind of a blanket action, I think generally is the way that courts have considered federal authority on a variety of other issues. And what's coming to my mind right now is DACA, is sort of the deferred action against immigrant children who came to the country sort of illegally, but had grown up mostly in the United States. The Obama administration argued in that case that their discretion over deportations allowed them to make a blanket allowance to these people to remain in the country legally. And we believe, of course, that that was a stretch of executive power, even though he had the ability to sort of administer immigration policy in a discretionary way. It's very different when the president then decides to give a blanket conference to American citizens. And so Biden essentially is arguing that he has the same extremely broad leeway over student loans that his Democratic predecessor argued that he had over immigration. And so we have to see how the courts would consider the distinctions in this case.
Final thought here. Manet suggests on the polling that a lot of people maybe have not considered this issue in depth. And so perhaps the president is underrating the backlash that this could create. And I think that I agree. And the poll that I was looking at is from Morning Consult in December. And it's pretty fractured. If you ask people about forgiving student debt, 19% of voters say forgive it all. 15% say forgive some for lower income Americans. 16% say forgive some for all Americans. 28% say don't forgive anything. And so there's a real breakdown here. But at the very least, you can point to the very negative reaction among baby boomers. 45% say don't forgive anything. And so, Kate, it seems to me that maybe Biden will shore up some millennial Gen Z votes here, but at the risk of losing some Gen Xers and baby boomers who think back and they said, well, I paid off my loans.
And who votes, Kyle? Baby boomers do. We know that. And so we should take those poll numbers with some seriousness. I think the same Morning Consult poll found that 80% of registered voters didn't have student loan debt at the time. I mean, this is a issue that's concentrated in a narrow set of voters. And it's also, to your point about the split, when some Americans describe, well, I want some debt forgiven for low-income individuals, that they may think of that as what we're already doing, which is offering income-based repayment, et cetera. So it also is worth noting in that poll that there was a split too on whether, even if you wanted this, if it was a high priority for you, that Congress or President Biden do it. So I do think that they are potentially overrating the political good effects here and really underrating just the corrosive divisiveness this could have right before the election, especially in a midterm election where they're trying to hold on to some really tough suburban districts where they need to hold seats. So I do think if you're looking for a good political midterm move, this would not be it.
Thank you, Kate and Monet. Thank you all for listening. You can email us at pwpodcast@wsj.com. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast app. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.